And we continue in our study of Pirkei Avos. As we've been talking the last 2 weeks, we are trying to understand this Mishnah that we are working on, and that is Hillel Omer. Hillel said, and the first week we worked on who exactly Hillel was and what we should take away from his life and legacy. The next thing that he said is, Heve mitalmidav shel Aaron. We should try to aspire to see ourselves as the students of Aaron HaKohen. And the truth is, we spoke also about what it was that was so unique about the lifetime and the legacy of Aaron HaKohen. But Aaron was somebody who was Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom, and that is what we focused on last week. And this week we get finally to the last words of the Mishnah that you will find on the top on the heading of the page. Ohev Esabrios Umekarvan LaTorah. We have an obligation. It is important to love God's creation, to love other people. Umekarvan LaTorah. And we also have a sacred obligation to make sure that we try to bring them in to the study of Torah. And that's really what I'd like to focus on today. There are two components to this shir. The first part is going to be about Ohev Esabrios and why that is fundamental and important for every Jew. And number two, this aspect of Mekarvan LaTorah, which really is a fascinating area of study in Halacha. So we start with a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. And this should give some kind of appreciation for what it means that Hillel teaches us here, Ohev Esabrios. So the Gemara recounts three different stories, all about the great Hillel HaZaken. All very similar stories, but all of them will make us have a greater appreciation for what it is that Hillel said here in our Mishnah. Very instructive words. Story number one is, a non-Jew walks into the Beis Medrash one day, and he sees the great Shammai. Shammai was a contemporary of Hillel. They were very close friends. They argued all the time, but it was L'shem Shamayim, and they were trying to get to the depths and the honest truth of what Torah stands for, to the Amitel Shel Torah. So he walks into the Beis Medrash one day, and he comes upon Shammai, and he asks him, I'm just curious. I know that the Jews believe that there is a Torah, but tell me, how many Torahs are there? And Shammai looks at him and says, I don't really understand the question. He says, just tell me, how many Torahs are there that you believe in? So Shammai says, well, if you break it down, the truth is there are two. One is the Torah Shebichsav, one is the Torah Shebaal Peh, one is the written Torah, and one is the oral tradition that we have, which is all-encompassing, which adds and augments so much to the Torah Shebichsav itself. Well, the non-Jew says to him, I would like to become a convert. I'm very interested in the religion. I'm spiritually inclined. But the problem is, I'm only willing to accept the Torah Shebichsav. After all, that's what God really gave the Jewish people. And everything else you rabbis made up as you went along. So I really have no interest in accepting that. I will accept only the Torah Shebichsav, and I will leave behind the Torah Shebaal Peh. And Shammai says, we cannot accept you as a convert if you're not willing to accept all of it. And therefore, I would suggest that you find another place to figure out how to explore your religious inclination. He goes down the block, and he bumps into Hillel. And he has the same conversation with him. I'd like to know, how many Torahs are there? And Hillel says, there are two. There's a Torah Shebichsav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. And then he says to Hillel, I'd very much be interested in becoming a Jew. I'd like to convert, but the problem is, I have no interest in the Torah Shebaal Peh. I only want to accept the Torah Shebichsav. And Hillel says, you're not scaring me. You're a very sensitive person. You are very interested and you're sincere. We will accept you as a convert. And that's a little outrageous. How can we accept a convert who's only willing to adopt the Torah Shebichsav and not the Torah Shebaal Peh? Hillel says, first lesson in Judaism is going to be tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, and the convert shows up in Hillel's home, and he sits down for his first lesson. And Hillel says, okay, I'd like to teach you the most fundamental aspect of Torah, and that is you have to learn how to read the Aleph Beis. If you don't know how to read Aleph Beis, you're not going to know how to daven, you won't know how to open a chumash, you won't know how to do anything as a Jew. So we first have to teach you the Aleph Beis. He opens up a Aleph Beis book, he shows him, this is Aleph, that's the sound it makes, this is Beis, this is Gimel, and he's reviewing with him, and he says, okay, next session tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. And the convert comes back to Hillel's home the next day, and Hillel, on the second day, points to an Aleph and says, this is a Tuf, points to a Beis and says, this is a Shin, points to the Gimel and says, this is a Resh, and this is the sound that it makes, and the non-Jew is scratching his head. He says, I could have sworn that yesterday I was here, and you told me this was Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. How did it now become Tuf, Shin, Resh, Kuf? It doesn't make sense. And Hillel says, you see the value of Torah Shebaal Peh. You see that without a tradition from a teacher, you see that without trusting somebody who has a real understanding of what Torah is, you will not even be able to have the most basic understanding of even the most fundamental of Torah, of even understanding how to locate an aleph or a beis, if you don't have the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebichsav itself, doesn't make any sense. And from there, the convert appreciated the sensitivity and the patience and the understanding of Hillel, and he ended up becoming a convert and taking everything upon himself and leaving nothing behind at all. And this is really what inspired and motivated him, the anvisanuso shel Hillel, the caring and the indulgence, the graciousness of Hillel, to give a person a chance and to be willing to talk to him and to be willing to have a conversation. That is what brought this convert in. The second story that is told there is Hillel once was confronted by a wannabe convert. And this person first went to Shammai and said, Gaireni almanasha telamdeni kol ha-terakula al-regal achas. I'd like you to convert me, but I want it to be done while I stand on one foot, which is a ridiculous statement, obviously, because there's so much that a convert needs to know before entering the Jewish religion. And Shammai says, I have no patience. This makes no sense. Please find somewhere else to go. Goes down the block. He finds Hillel. Asks him the same question. Hillel says, sure, I'll teach you all of Torah on one foot. And that is, Ma da alach sani lechavrach lo savid. If you want to know what Torah really, what the foundation of all of Torah is, it's very simple. Va'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. That's all of Torah. Ve'idach, and everything else we'll figure out later on. Everything else is just commentary. But that's the main focus of all that Torah represents and all that Torah stands for. Once again, that is something that encouraged this convert and that made him accept upon himself the understandings of what Torah life is all about. And the third story that the Gemara tells is also an amusing story about a non-Jew who was once walking by a local yeshiva, and he hears how one of the teachers is teaching the young students a pasuk in Chumash, in Parshas Tetzaveh. And there the Torah describes all of the clothing that were to be worn by the Kohen Gadol. So he walks by the window and he overhears how he's saying, Ve'ela ha-begadim ha-she-yasu. And these are the clothing that you should make. A choshen that has gold on it, and a me'il, and it's describing all these beautiful ornaments that the Kohen Gadol wears. And the non-Jew says to himself, wow, this is what all the Jews wear. I would love to be a part of the Jewish religion. He walks into Shammai and he says, I would like you to convert me in order that I should be able to wear these clothing. And Shammai says, no, you don't understand. There's only one member of the Jewish community who wears these clothing, and that is the Kohen Gadol. You are obviously unable to be a Kohen Gadol. Why? Because your father is not a Kohen, and you are a convert. We love you. We're willing to take you. But it's not going to be with the understanding that you'll be able to wear these clothing. And the non-Jew says, no, but I insist. I would like to be the Kohen Gadol. I want to wear the clothing. And Shammai says, well, then go find yourself another religion. He goes down the block. He finds Hillel. And Hillel says, no problem. We'll take you in. We'll make you a Kohen Gadol at some point. Don't worry about it. And later on, Hillel sits down and starts learning Torah with him. And he gets to a pasuk in Parshas Acharei Mos where it says, Hazar HaKarev Yumas, which means, if you have a non-Kohen who does service in the Beis HaMikdash inappropriately, if he's not supposed to be there and he goes in without permission, it says that he's Chayiv Misa Bidei Shamayim, he loses his life. So the convert takes a step back and he says, who is that a reference to? Who is going to lose their life? And Hillel says, that is even the great David HaMelech. If he would walk into the Beis HaMikdash and do service that he was not supposed to do, even he would lose his life. And he said, wow, if even David HaMelech is unworthy of being a Kohen Gadol, then I guess I too am unable to be a Kohen Gadol. And it's nothing to do with how great I am or how pious I am. It has to do with whether I'm from the family of Kohanim. And all three of these stories, the Gemara says, prove the point that Hillel was somebody who was Ohev Es Habrios. Hillel has such understanding of people. Hillel was able to be patient with people. Hillel was able to give time and to be so gracious to them, to the point that the Gemara says all three of these converts ultimately met up with each other, and they were all talking about how humble Hillel was. Look what he was willing to do to bring another person, tachas kanfe hashchina. That is exactly what Hillel says here in our Mishnah. Ohev es habrios. If you're willing to be caring and sensitive enough to people, ultimately it will bring them lekarvan la-Torah. Ultimately it will show them the beauty of what Torah life is. If you show them what kind of understandings we as Torah Jews have for others, and how sensitive we are or are supposed to be, that is the ultimate way that we can really bring somebody back to a Torah life and to a Torah understanding. Once you're here, I should really tell a great story about your own daughter. I don't know if you know about it, but Rabbi Yoni Levin is one of my close friends, and his mother-in-law is here, so she should be proud of all that he does. And Rabbi Levin told me an amazing story this past week. We spent a lot of time in the car, and he said an amazing story about his wife, who is your daughter, and it really brings to this point. And that is that there was a woman who came into shul one week in Esh Kodesh, and she didn't look well. She looked like something was really bothering her. I don't know if you heard the story yet. It's an amazing story. So she came into Esh Kodesh, and there was something that was really bothering her, and Mrs. Levin noticed that there was something unusual. So she asked her, is everything okay? And she said, the truth is, everything is not okay. Why? Because she's a balas tshuva, and she has a sister who is not religious. And the sister had called her on a Thursday afternoon and said she'd like to come over to the house on Thursday evening to introduce her to her boyfriend. And they came over to the house, and she was devastated because the boyfriend was not Jewish. And she was devastated over the fact that her sister was about to marry or get engaged to a non-Jew, and that was something that was tragic in her mind. And she felt, I'm not in a position to tell my sister what to do because she's an adult. This is who she's dating. I really wasn't consulted about it. All she wanted to do was have her meet me. And she came to shul on Shabbos and was devastated over this prospect of her sister marrying a non-Jew. And Mrs. Levin was very sensitive and very caring, and they were talking to each other, and they were discussing the issue. And then, Sunday or Monday, this woman called her back to say that you're not going to believe it. They broke up. Now, how did they break up? They were about to get engaged, or they were engaged already. And she said, well, she came to my house on Thursday night. Just so happens to be, very unusually, so happened to be that the table was set on Thursday night for Shabbos. They were having a lot of company. So the whole table was set all the way out for all the guests. And her sister called her on Sunday morning and said, I came into your house and that's what I saw. That is the life that I want for myself. That is the life that I want for myself. When a religious person is able to show, not with words, but just with actions, show the way that we live life and the way that we can be sensitive and we can be welcoming and we can be understanding, there's no greater way lekarvan laTorah than that. Nothing needs to be said sometimes. All that needs to be done is to show the beauty and the sensitivity of what a Torah life means. And sometimes that's the most powerful lesson. And I think that was a very important story, and it frames a lot of the conversation for today, to get into what it means when Hillel says, Ohe Vesabrios. It seems that Hillel feels that we have to go to the extreme. Look what Hillel himself did. He went to the extreme, the patience that he had for other people, which really didn't make sense. Why should he give the time of day to this non-Jew who walks in and is asking him for all kinds of ridiculous requests? It's not even worth his time. But Hillel says, every human being is worth my time. Even though I'm the most prominent member of the generation, even though I have better things to be doing, there's nothing better that we can be doing than to show love for another human being and to show compassion and understanding. And therefore, Hillel here teaches us that this is a value that we really need to understand as a fundamental of Judaism, but also as something that we need to be willing to go to the extreme for. And the Maharal asks a very obvious question. Why do I have an obligation of avas habrios? Why do I have to love people? Again, obviously I shouldn't hurt people, obviously I shouldn't insult them, but why do I have to go out of my way to love them? What does that obligation come from? And the Maharal explains so beautifully in two different places in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. He writes it both on the Mishnah of Hevedan as kala adam lekav zechus. Why do I need to judge everybody favorably? And why is it that I need to love every member of the Jewish community? Says the Maharal very simply, and you look here, you have it on number Aleph. Umidazos. If you want to know why is it that we have this obligation, it is because it is considered to be an anaf me'avas Hashem. We look at this as an extension, as an addendum to the mitzvah of avas Hashem. We all have a mitzvah to love God. Now, what does it mean to love God? I daven every day. Does that show my love? Perhaps. I learn Torah. Does that show my love? Maybe it does. But what exactly does it mean on a tangible level? Says the Maharal, if you love God, then obviously it means you love His children. That's an extension of loving God. We all have friends. The greatest way to love your friend is to show that you are proud of the accomplishments of their children. There's no greater feeling that a parent can have than for somebody to come and say that they're proud of their children. And therefore, says the Maharal, Avas Habrios is not just a value in and of itself. Avas Habrios is really an extension of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. If you love God enough, then obviously you will love everything that God does. And a great example is the following. For anyone who has children who are dating or who have dated, you're well aware of the fact that sometimes your child dates somebody and the person that they're dating has interests or has a profession that your child was never interested in the first place. It never caught their attention. I'll say for myself, graphic design was something that I was never interested in. Absolutely never interested in. And now, it's very interesting to me. Why? Because if I love my wife, then I love the work that she's involved with, even though it's not a part of my life at all, even though it's something that I never focused on. But obviously, if you appreciate somebody, then you appreciate what they do as well, even if it's not your profession. I don't think that teaching Torah was my wife's passion, but I think she appreciates what it is that I do. Not because it's what she wants to do, but because if you appreciate a person, then you appreciate all that they do as well. If you appreciate the Ribono Shel Olam, if you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you have a sense of Avas Hashem, then it means you have to love His creation as well. It means you have to love His people, because His people are something that are the extension of Him. And that's the way to come to a greater appreciation of God Himself. Says the Maharal, this is why the Mishnah instructs us here to go to the extreme when it comes to Avas Habrios, because we have to go to the extreme in our levels of Avas Hashem. And if we love God enough, then we need to love His people. Then we need to love everything about Him. And that means His world and His people, all that He has created. In the Navi Yeshaya, when he describes the relationship that existed between Avram Avinu and the Ribono Shel Olam, the Navi refers to it as Zera Avraham Ohavi. Avram Avinu is referred to as the beloved and the adored child of God Himself. He's the treasured son of the Ribono Shel Olam. And the Chasam Sofer asks, why is it that of all the Avos, of all the forefathers, Avram Avinu is referred to as Avram Ohavi? What made him so beloved? And writes the Chasam Sofer, I would have said that it's because he was willing to sacrifice so much by the Akedah, and because he started the first Baal Tshuva movement, and because he was the first one to recognize the presence of God in the world. I have a million and one reasons that I can give why Avraham Avinu should be the beloved of God. Says the Chasam Sofer, they're all wrong. If you want to know the real reason, it's because Avraham Avinu looked at life and he said, I have two ways that I can live it. I have two choices that I can make. One way of living life could be to be like those individuals before the Mabul. There were some pious individuals who lived in the days of Noah, and they made a decision that the way to be spiritually uplifted, the way to be close to godliness, is to separate myself, not take responsibility for anyone else in the world, and just focus on my own relationship with God, because nothing else matters. And Avraham Avinu said that's a very nice way of life, but it didn't work. It brought about destruction to the world. And the way of life that Avraham Avinu chose was to become the paragon of chesed. Avraham Avinu was the Amud HaChesed. That's what his entire life was. He exuded chesed. He exuded understanding and caring and sensitivity for everyone else who was around him, not only his family members, but anyone who he encountered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you love my children, you love my creations, then that means you yourself are Avram Ohavi. You are my beloved. That's the way it works, says the Chasam Sofer. That is why God is referred to as Avram Ohavi. Don't be uncomfortable. She's a doctor. I'm sure she has a very important phone call. But Avram Ohavi, says the Chasam Sofer, that's what it's all about. Avram Avinu is my beloved because he loves my children. And this is a very powerful statement that the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim. What's beautiful about the Mesilas Yesharim, it was written by one of the greatest philosophers of all time in the 1700s. Number one, what's amazing is the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato, only lived 40 years. He was born in 1707, and he passed away in 1746. So he was a very young man, and accomplished tremendous things, and made a very powerful impact on the Jewish community for millennia after he passed away. And yet, the Ramchal, what's amazing about the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, if you've never learned it through, the Mesilas Yesharim, most of what he writes is very simple, very basic. Sometimes the greatest chiddush is something that's simple. Sometimes the greatest chiddush is when you hear something and it makes sense, and that is the greatest insight we can get, when it's not convoluted and it's just presented in a very clear fashion. And the Mesilas Yesharim writes that in his opening statement. When he begins the book, in the Hakdama, in the introduction, he says, I'm probably not going to teach you anything that you do not yet know, which is not really true. But he says, everything in here most people probably know, but it's worth discussing again. And it's worth laying out in a very clear and concise fashion. So here, the Mesilas Yesharim writes a beautiful comment, and I've always been very moved and inspired by the way that he says this. Let's learn it together in number Beis, where the Ramchal writes, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ohev. You want to know who does God love? Who engenders the love of the Ribono Shel Olam? I'll tell you, says the Ramchal, it's very simple. Ela Lemi She'ohev Es Yisrael. God loves the person who is willing to love his own creations, his own people. V'chal ma she'adam magdil ahavaso liYisrael, gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu magdil alav. The amount of love that we show for others is commensurate, it's corresponding to the amount of love that God will show and express for us. V'chal ma she'adam magdil ahavaso liYisrael. The amount that we're willing to go to the extreme to show our love for other people, Gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magdil Alav, that is commensurate, that is proportional to the amount that God will show His love for us. It's a powerful statement. And then writes the Ramchal, Ve'elu Heim HaRoim HaAmitim Shel Yisrael. This is what it means to be a great Jewish leader. The common denominator of all great Jewish leaders is that they had an inexhaustible love for the Jewish people. And I've seen it. I don't know how many people have had a close-up interaction with great Jewish leaders, but they're willing to go to the extreme for their love of other people, even when it's at a tremendous personal cost. Even when it's at a cost to their health, to their finances, to their own lives, when they're taking tremendous risks. But if it's something that you feel is an inexhaustible love in your life, if it's limitless, that, says the Ramchal, is something that every great Jewish leader has taken upon themselves. And that's the opportunity that great Jewish leaders have and have shown us and proven to show us is the mark of greatness. Writes the Ramchal, these are people, shemosrim atzmam altsonam, people who are willing to give up of themselves for the flock of God Himself. Vidarshim u'mishtadim al shlomam v'tovasam achal hadracham, and they will take every measure possible to try and exacerbate that great love for God's people. Va'omdim tamid b'peretz lehispalel aleihem. Look at the last line. He says, "Lema dome." What is this considered comparable to? Le'av she'eno ohev shum adam. Who does a parent love more? Yoser mimi shehu roeh she'ohev banav ahava ne'emenes. Your children go to school. They have lots of great teachers. Which teacher do you love more than anybody else? The one who's willing to send you an email at night and tell you something good about your own child. I'm sure there are many great teachers. But that one who takes the extra minute to make you feel good about an accomplishment of your own child is the one who will be most appreciated. And God works in the same way. Writes the Ramchal, V'hu davar shehateva ya'id alav. This is basic human nature. And we know it to be true in our own lives. And therefore, writes the Ramchal, the same way it is true for us human beings, that is the formula in our relationship with God Himself as well. If you understand that God is the Father of all of His children, then you also understand and appreciate that God is in a position to appreciate somebody who loves His children and who's willing to exert of His own energy and effort for the betterment of His own children. So now, we get to the second part, which is the next statement of Hillel, Mekarvan LaTorah. And we've all heard about the Kiruv movement, which has exploded over the last 50 years and had tremendous success. But this is a very complicated movement. I don't mean in a negative, it's just very complicated. And you'll understand in a minute what I mean. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, what is our obligation when we talk about Kiruv? So about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I went on a trip to Eretz Yisrael with 10 Rabbanim from some from our neighborhood, some from other neighborhoods. Somebody sponsored this trip, and it was an amazing trip. We've done it the last 2 years. And we spent a week learning together, meeting with very distinguished personalities, and it was an amazing time. And one of the people that we met, it was my first time ever meeting him, was Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz, who is now the Rosh Yeshiva of Eish HaTorah. He's an extremely special human being who has thought-provoking comments about everything in the world. Everything we mentioned to him, he had a lot to say. And something that I noticed in his office, which was very interesting to me, was sometimes when I go to a very thoughtful person's office, it's interesting for me to look around the walls and see what they hang up. maybe I shouldn't be doing it, but it's something that always catches my attention because I always believe they don't just put it up for no good reason. There's some story behind the things that are hanging in their offices or the items that they choose to highlight. They know people are going to come in. They know people are going to look at it. Well, maybe nobody else looks other than me, but I was there and I was extremely distracted. As we were talking to him, I'm looking at what's behind him. And I couldn't focus on what he was saying because I just thought this was the strangest thing I've ever seen. So what would you expect? He has this beautiful office in Eish HaTorah's World Center, which is right by the Kotel, and it's overlooking the Har HaBayis. And I thought there could be so many items that he would have chosen to hang on the wall, but there was something that caught my attention that was very out of place. And it was basically the whole wall behind him. The whole size of this wall behind him was a map of the world. A very detailed map of the world. And I think he noticed that some of us were distracted by it and were wondering why that's the wallpaper behind his desk. And he said, let me explain. He said, for those of you who are wondering, I see my entire life as a mission. And I look at this map every day. And I wonder how many Jews are stuck in Indonesia that we haven't even thought about yet. And how many Jews are there on the West Coast in the United States that nobody's worrying about on college campuses that are intermarrying every day and nobody's paying attention to them. And he was pointing to different places on the globe and pointing out to us what the intermarriage rate is in each community in each country. And he said, this is what he stays up every night thinking about. This is what bothers him more than anyone else. And he said, so we have 10 rabbis in the room. Tell me, how much have you done to invest to make sure that God's children aren't going to be lost? It was an embarrassing question, because the answer to that was basically zero for all of us. And it was an amazing wake-up call to think about not only our own communities, but to think about the Jewish community as a whole. How much are we doing, and what is the intermarriage rate, and how successful are we, or unsuccessful, in making sure that all of God's children figure out how they can have a portal of entry back into our community. So the Chafetz Chaim says we should never underemphasize the importance of Kiruv Rechokim. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, he'll explain to us why it's so important. Hadavar Dome, this is a number gimel. Chafetz Chaim writes, Hadavar Dome lemisha roa es chavero tovea benahar. Imagine you walk by a river one day and you see that somebody is submerged under the water. You see that they are engulfed in flames, whatever it may be. And they're in a very dangerous situation. He's tovea benar, he's suffocating, he's drowning. Oshar sakana shemitzvah lahatzilo. Obviously, I will try whatever it is in my power to extricate that human being, to salvage them, to save their life. Because that's what a decent human being does. Now, what if, says the Chafetz Chaim, I may not have the kalim to do so? What if I'm not a lifeguard? I don't know how to jump into the river and save someone. I don't know how to fight against somebody who's suffocating in a fire or a house that's filled with smoke. What if I don't know how to deal with that? Well, then obviously my obligation is to call somebody else who does. I need to call a fireman. I need to call a lifeguard. I will call whoever it is that I can find that can potentially be helpful in this situation. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if you don't do that, you obviously are in violation of the Isser Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. You are not allowed to stand by while somebody else is being killed. You have to take responsibility and do whatever you can to help the situation out. And writes the Chafetz Chaim after the three dots here, Kamokein. That is just a mushel, he says. That is a way to frame the current state of events of the Jewish people. Kishanu Roim Anashim, when we see people, when we come across individuals, Shemerov Chalishas Daitam V'Goldil Terdasam Bahavle Hazman. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, we don't live life with an understanding that people are evil. We live life with an understanding that most people want to do the right thing, just they have Chalishos Hadas, V'godel Terdasa Mahavle Azman. We're absorbed in the culture. We're preoccupied with other things. We are distracted from focusing on God and on His principles, on His values. It's not because people are evil. It's because they just have so much else going on. There's so much noise in the community that they live, in the country that they happen to inhabit. All of that causes for a person to be Nishtakach Mehem Toras Hashem. They get to a point where they have completely neglected and forgotten what God's Torah is all about. Says the Chafetz Chaim, a person is about to live life and cut themselves off from eternity, from an eternal connection that they could have had with God. So you see somebody drowning in a river. You see somebody whose house is engulfed in flames. You run, you jump to do whatever it is that can be helpful to them. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, do we understand and appreciate that this is far worse than that? Here you have an individual who is connected with God himself, and who was very close with God, and is about to live out their life, breaking that connection one day after the other. Says the Chafetz Chaim, how do we sit by quietly and do nothing to help them? How do we not feel an obligation, lekarvan laTorah, to do something to show them the beauty of Torah life and to show them the sensitivity of what a Torah life means? Writes the Chafetz Chaim, we have no right to ignore it. We have no right to pretend that it doesn't exist. While we watch somebody self-destruct, we cannot just sit by quietly, the same way we wouldn't do that in any other physical danger in the world. We cannot do that when it comes to somebody's spiritual danger either. And this is a very complicated issue, because as much as Kiruv Rechokim is of tremendous value and import, the question is, how far are we willing to push the limits of halacha to help facilitate Kiruv Rechokim? So you speak to people who are in the Kiruv profession, and you ask them, what is the most basic, the most obvious entry that you have had success with in those who you have ultimately been makariv? What will they say? Shabbos. I think unanimously, or I shouldn't say unanimously because I don't know, but the people I've spoken to say Shabbos is a very critical time for a person who's a potential Baal Tshuva to gain an appreciation of what a Torah life is about. Shabbos speaks to people. And they come to a home and they see how the family spends time together and they see how beautiful the house is on a Shabbos. That is a very inspiring moment for them. I actually was very taken aback when Sivan Rahav Meir told me the story about how she became religious. I don't know if everybody knows who she is or not, but she was a very famous media personality in Israel until she moved to America and became a famous media personality here. So she became a Balas Tshuva. I forgot where she grew up. I think in Savion maybe? I don't know. Where? Herzliya. And she said, I think until she was in high school, she had never met a religious Jew in her life, which is an astounding statement. She had never had an encounter with a religious Jew in her life. And then something came up, and there was some kind of get-together of different high schools, and she met a religious girl who was in her class in a different high school, and she was invited to come to their home for a Friday night meal. And she went. Her parents allowed her because they said, nothing's going to happen. She's going to see how crazy they are. It's going to only push her further away from the religious life. And she went to their home. This is not a private story. She's shared this publicly, and it's a very inspiring story. I'm not sure it would have turned me on to Judaism, but it's interesting that it turned her on. So she said that Friday night at the table, there was a knock at the door, and the young girl, one of the members of the family, went to the table, answered the door, and had some kind of conversation with whoever it was that was there, and then came back a few minutes later. She came back, and all the members of the family asked, who was that? What was going on? And she said it was the neighbor who came over and said that she needs a cup of sugar. So I went to the kitchen, I gave her a cup of sugar, and I put it in a cup, and she left. So the father says, how did you give her a cup of sugar? Don't you know that she's not religious? She's obviously going to use the sugar to bake on Shabbos, and you just facilitated her to do an Avera. Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol. Had you not given her the sugar, she wouldn't violate the malacha of Bishul on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to give her the sugar. And the brother says, well, why do you see it that way? I see it differently. Maybe we should be down the kapschus and say that she was just making herself a tea, and she was not violating any malacha on Shabbos, and all she wanted was a cup of sugar to make the tea taste better, and of course we should give it to her. To which another member of the family chimes in and says, maybe we should have given the cup of sugar because if we didn't, she would get in her car, go to the supermarket, buy her own sugar, and violate more malacha. So we have saved her, and she's sitting at the table listening to this crazy conversation, and she's saying to herself, wow, if they can fight over a cup of sugar, it means this religion is worth something to them. It's worth fighting about. Personally, I would have been turned off from this story. Just wouldn't have worked for me. For me, I would say, if they're all fighting about this nonsense, then there's nothing to their religion. But she saw it very differently, and she said if she had to go back in time, she would think that was the story that really changed her whole mindset about what Judaism is all about. And it was a very telling story. But the problem is that really true? Do we have a right to bend the laws of the Torah sometimes in order to bring about the greater good of Kiruv Rechokim? And this is a question that is asked and discussed by many great Gedolim over the last 50 years. And it's a major problem. So just yesterday, Art Scroll made an event celebrating the culmination of a project they were doing for the last 20 years. And they invited me to come, and I went. It was a beautiful event. But what was more beautiful was I didn't know that my father was also going to be there. So I got to spend time with my father. What was even better than that was that because I was there with my father, we sat next to each other. The next person who walked into the room was Rav David Cohen. He sat next to my father. The next one who walked in was Rav Reuven Feinstein, who sat next to him. So it was a wonderful table, and I was just sitting there listening to everybody's conversations. And I went to Rav Reuven Feinstein, and I said, you know, I'm speaking tomorrow about Kiruv Rechokim. I would like to know if what they quote in the name of your father is accurate. And he said, 100%. He said, many disagree, but 100% what they quote in the name of my father is accurate. And that is the following statement. There's a tshuva sefer written by Rav David Feinstein, who is the older son of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and a great posik in his own right. And he writes the following in the name of his father. V'din ze nogea l'maise l'kama b'nei Torah sherotzim l'karev balei tshuva, kodem shemaschilim lishmar ha-shabbos. A very obvious entry for somebody to have an appreciation for the religion is to invite them for a Shabbos. V'omrim, and they say, d'yesh to'elas lahem lavo lechol b'shabbos. And they say, if this family is going to be invited to my home to experience a Shabbos meal, they'll gain an appreciation for what this is all about, and maybe they'll become religious. L'chori yiev shalasos kein, im vada yichalalu Shabbos beglal ha-hazmana. He said the opinion of his father was that you're not allowed to invite such a person to your home for a Shabbos because you know that they're going to be mechalal Shabbos to get there. Now, this is a very highly contentious issue. My father happens to disagree, as well as Rav Asher Weiss I've asked on many occasions, but this is a major question. Am I allowed to invite somebody, even though I have a very good intention, because I want them to become religious, I want them to at least taste what it means to be living a religious life, but if I know that I'm going to be the cause of Chilul Shabbos, am I allowed to do that or not? A powerful question. And it really gets to the root of the issue. How far are we willing to go? Are there limitations to this idea of Kiruv Rechokim? So the Chafetz Chaim says we have to look at Kiruv Rechokim as somebody's drowning, somebody's destructing, somebody's losing their own life, and they're cutting off their connection with God. We have to save them. The same way we would save anybody who's suffocating or who's drowning in the river. But yet, are there limitations to how far we are willing to go for that, to bring about that good? So my father is of the opinion that he thinks it would be permissible. Why? He has a very strong argument. Among them, it's a very complicated argument, but among those arguments is, this person's going to come to your home. So what's your concern? That they're going to drive to your house? Guess what? If they don't drive to your house, they're going to be driving to the movie theater or to the supermarket or to anywhere else that they want to go. They're not going to sit shuttered up in the house. It's not the way people live today. They're going to drive somewhere else. And on top of that, so instead of driving to the supermarket, they're going to drive to your house. So it's the same Chilul Shabbos. On top of that, when they sit in your home, they're going to be respectful of your rules. So you will tell them, this is an Orthodox home. We don't use electronics on Shabbos. Which means while they're sitting at your table, their cell phones are going to be in their coats, and they're not going to be using it at the table. So my father argues you're going to save them from 3 hours of Chilul Shabbos while they're sitting at your table. They would have otherwise been on their phones constantly, writing something, texting something, sending an email, calling other people, doing something that otherwise they're going to be saved from doing when they're sitting in your home, because they're going to be respectful of your rules. And that is something to consider. That is something to think about. But again, it gets to the point of, are there limitations for what we are willing to do? And here, once again, he writes that in the name of his father is of the opinion that we don't have a right to break any of the rules of the Torah in order to bring about this ideal of Kiruv Rechokim. So for example, there's another issue that is discussed in the Sefer Shevet HaLevi. The Shevet HaLevi is written by Rav Vosner. And here he writes about a question that he was asked by many religious people in Israel. And that question is, there's a yeshuv in Israel that's totally secular. And the members of the yeshuv are now becoming a little bit more interested So they invite a religious person to come for Shabbos and show them what is a Shabbos like. The problem is this person's going to come there. They're not going to have a minyan. They're not going to have the atmosphere of a Shabbos. They're not going to have everything that would make their Shabbos otherwise a very positive and spiritual experience. They're not going to have it because they're in a community where they are the only religious person there. Do I have a right to go to a place to put myself in a situation where I know I will not have a minyan, I'm not going to have Kriyas HaTorah, I'm not going to have the regular amenities of what a Shabbos is, but I'm doing it because I want to be able to give inspiration to people to consider them taking Shabbos upon themselves? And Rav Ozner comes to the conclusion, you can read it on your own, he comes to the conclusion here that it is impossible to give blanket statements about these kinds of questions. And each question needs to be dealt with on its own merit. What is the likelihood that you're actually going to make a difference? How talented are you at this job? How much is there a receptive audience on the other end who's really interested in what you have to say, or are you forcing yourself upon them and perhaps that's really not something worth investing anything in? So these are all mitigating factors that he writes need to be considered as we think about a question like this one. But once again, this opens up a general discussion about what people refer to today as a heter kiruv. You ask members of NCSY how many times it is that they're confronted with very thorny issues about what are we willing to break in order to bring some of the NCSY kids in, and what do we have to say? No, this is the standard, this is what we do, and there is no right to violate any of the rules of the Torah. This is just a very interesting discussion to think about as we mention this idea of kiruv rechokim. But what I'd like to end our shiur with is one final comment about Hillel HaZaken and why it's relevant to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, as we said, was taught by Hillel HaZaken, and we spoke a lot about him in the past. And Hillel here teaches us that we need to go to the extreme in our feelings for Avas Habrios, in our feelings of love and appreciation for other people. Hillel, the Gemara says, was a great leader. And part of his leadership was that he was a teacher. So the Gemara Maseches Sukkah Daf Chaf Ches tells us about the students of Hillel HaZaken. Shmonim Talmidim Hayolo LeHillel HaZaken. Hillel had 80 students. 30 of them, says the Gemara, were on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 of them were on the level of Yehoshua ben Nun. Not so bad. And in higher mathematics, 30 and 30 is 60, so you have 20 left. Says the Gemara, what was with the other 20? Who were they? They were somewhere in the middle, in between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua ben Nun. So not bad. A pretty prestigious group of students. The Gemara says the greatest of those students was Yonasan ben Uziel. Very famous personality. He was the greatest student of Hillel. The weakest of the students of Hillel was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who ended up becoming the leader of the Jewish people. So he was the weakest, and Yonasan ben Uziel was the greatest. Says the Gemara, I'd like to know, invite me in. Tell me, what were these students like? What does it mean to be on the level of Yehoshua ben Nun? Tell me what that experience feels like, sounds like. So the Gemara says, okay, no problem. I'll tell you how we describe Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as we said, just remember, was the weakest of this group of 80 students of Hillel. Says the Gemara, listen carefully. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew every Mishnah, every Gemara, every Halacha, every Agada, every Drush. The Gemara then says he knew how to understand the language of the trees. He knew how to communicate with the animals, and he even knew how to communicate with the angels. He had conversations with angels all the time. The Gemara then writes that any question that was sent from any other place in Eretz Yisrael, he was able to answer on the spot, and on occasion he was able to even communicate with the demons when he felt it was necessary to do so. So that was the weakest of the students of Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Asked the Gemara, if that's the weakest student, what are you going to say about Yonasan ben Uziel? What is there left to say? What made him more prominent, more distinguished, more holy than anyone else? And the Gemara answers, I'll tell you. There was something that Yonasan ben Uziel had that no one else in the room had, and that was that he was so holy, whenever a bird would fly in his immediate vicinity, the bird would get burnt from his extreme degrees of holiness. He had like a ball of fire around him when he studied Torah. And therefore, anything that came in his vicinity would get scorched, would get burnt right away. So the Kutzker Rebbe asks, in his inimitable style, nobody else asks such questions. He wants to know, well, if that's what you're going to say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and that's what we're going to say about his students, Yonasan ben Uzziel, they must have seen something in Hillel as their teacher. Obviously, Hillel was greater than all of them, otherwise they wouldn't have studied under him. So what could possibly be greater than all that we've described? What did Hillel have that his students did not? What did they see in him that was greater than them? And what inspired them to come study under his leadership? That is the question of the Kutzker Rebbe. And he suggests, you want to know what's really the ultimate greatness in the world? It is the fact that Hillel had everything that his students had. And he was as holy, if not holier, than Yonasan ben Uzziel. But the greatness of Hillel was that when a bird came in his immediate vicinity, it did not get burnt. He knew how to tolerate the society that he lived in. That is the highest level. Somebody who's able to be a great person and yet have an understanding of the community that they live in, have an understanding of the people that they interact with, and be able to tolerate and deal with all of that at the same time that they are on their own level, in a level by themselves with God, but yet they can figure out how to live in the community together with all of that godliness and integrate it all seamlessly, that, says the Kutzker, is the highest level of sanctity. That is the highest level of purity. When we describe Mordechai HaTzadik, we're about to enter into the season of Purim. When we describe who Mordechai was, so we're told, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaBira U'Shmo Mordechai. So one of the Mefarshim writes, there was Shushan and then there was Shushan HaBira, two different places. One was a province and one was a smaller community. It's like New York and New York City. So Shushan was the general province. But Shushan HaBira was the hub where everything happened. Mordechai didn't just live in Shushan. He lived in Shushan HaBira. He was a politician living with everybody else, with all the corruption that was going on in their Washington of that day. It was going on there in Shushan HaBira, and he was in the thick of it. And yet the greatness of Mordechai was, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaBira. Can have a person who's soaring to levels like Mordechai did, who was a Navi, who was a Rosh HaSanhedrin, who was the head of the Jewish community at the time, and yet he was able to figure out how to bring all that into the reality of which he lived. And that is the greatest accomplishment. There is nothing more that one can do than that. So much so, you look in our Parsha, right after Kabbalah HaTorah, what is the first instruction that the Jewish community is given after they accept the Torah? God has this lofty experience with all of them, and He reveals His presence, and He tells them how much He loves them, and He shows them how much He's committed to their cause, and how much He will always be there with them. And it was a very overwhelming experience for all the Jews who were there at Har Sinai. And what is the first instruction that the Jews are given after this tremendous revelation that they have with God? Shuvu lachem la'ahalechem. Now your job is, go back home and see, are you able to translate all of these messages into the reality in which you live? What does it mean to be a Jew? What it means to be a Jew is, oev es habrios and makarvan la'Torah. What it means to be a Jew is to be a person of understanding, a person of patience and sensitivity, a person who is able to be caring of others and to be thoughtful and considerate. And just because I may live on some kind of spiritual plane all by myself, that does not mean that I have a right to neglect anyone around me. It does not mean that I have a right to have a lack of tolerance for anyone around me. I have to be understanding. It doesn't mean I'm accepting of what they do. It doesn't mean I'm accepting of the decisions that they make, but it means I'm tolerant. It means I understand that they have a perspective as well. It means I understand that they've made life choices and I need to respect that. And therefore, Hillel goes down in our history as one of the greats of our nation, one of the foundational members of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. This is why Hillel is quoted on almost every single daf in Shas, because when a person lives life with this kind of perspective, a man who had it all but who understood it all, a man who was able to live with the community and have a real keen sensitivity toward their needs, and therefore infused his halachic positions with that kind of focus and that kind of mindset, that is the person that goes down for all eternity as one of the founding fathers of Torah Shebaal Peh. And that is all encompassed in this very cryptic line in our Mishnah. Ohev es habrios u'makarv on la Torah. That was the mantra of Hillel's entire life. To be able to go out into the world and show people the beauty of a Torah life. And there's nothing greater than that itself. That was the highest ideal that Hillel understood. That is the only way, l'karvan l'Torah, to show people your passion, your sensitivity, and your caring. And ultimately, they'll be motivated and influenced by seeing just that. So, Amir Tashem, next week, we